Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for November 3rd, 2010. Malware research uncovered. In this edition, we talked to two researchers about the latest techniques they uncovered in their malware research. Jibran Ilyas and Nick Perkakov, TrustWave Spider Labs research team, joins us. This is Jibran Ilyas.
Once they break in, as you saw in the demos, it's just about leaving the malware and letting the malware do the job. They even have automated exfiltration methods now.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Westervelt. So we've heard time and time again from antivirus vendors and others about the growing sophistication of malware. Well, two researchers documented the growing savviness of malware writers. In a moment, you'll hear from Jibran Ilyas and Nick Perkakov, TrustWave's Spider Labs research team. The researchers are called in to investigate security incidents for TrustWave. The forensics investigators examined more than 200 incidents and collected hundreds of malware samples over the last year. I met up with them at the Sector Conference in Toronto, where they demonstrated how some of the malware is coded to evade antivirus detection and hoodwink forensics investigators.
So, Jibran, thanks very much for taking the time out. I just wanted to ask you a couple quick questions about some of the malware that you presented, your demoed actually. It seems like that many of the companies that were targeted were using some really poor security.
Yeah. You could say that the ingress filtering, like,
for the last one, the defense contract.
Exactly. So I think the thing with these companies that we were showing examples for, they have third-party IT companies that actually service them. So, you know, these are restaurants who can't afford a full-time IT staff, right? So they outsource their IT operations. And, you know, let's just say there's a printer error or something. They don't want to have someone physically come out there to actually fix that little of a problem. That would take like 10 hours to fix a little problem. So they have things like remote desktop, VNC, PC Anywhere. Those ports open for them to come in. What they don't realize is that if they open it for the integrators, they've also opened it for the hackers. And that's how, you know, they break into the environment. And the passwords, you know, if you're an integrator and you have 200 merchants, likelihood is that you don't have a unique password for all of them. You have just one password that's going around. So if the attacker gets to one, they can actually easily get to a lot of environments really fast. And once they break in, as you saw in the demos, you know, it's just about leaving the malware and letting the malware do the job. They even have automated exfiltration methods now.
So that means they don't have to go back in?
Yeah. So let's just say that you got in once. If you're the attacker, you get in once, and the restaurant or a hotel, they close the RDP or VNC or PC Anywhere. It doesn't affect you because the data is coming outbound to you. And if it's coming on ports like 443, which is the SSL port, that's usually allowed out of the environments. So you're going to get your data, and you're going to get it every day. And as you saw in the demos, that they had timed it, because at 1 o'clock in the morning, no one's really monitoring the systems. So that's when it does the operation of compressing and encrypting the file and then sending it out.
So when you go in and do forensics on these systems to figure out what the heck went wrong, is there a particular spot that you look first?
Yeah. Like a lot of times when we go in forensics, we already know that compromise has occurred. So we get information from, you know, card brands or the banks that, okay, is what kind of data is extracted. So if it's credit card data that's been compromised, then we know that the attackers must have targeted the ways either through the network, via network sniffing, or via memory dumpers, which should take the data from the RAM. So we look for processes that actually, carry the credit card transactions from from the actually key swiper to the application. So before it even gets encrypted, they get the data. So we look for actually just the process flow of credit card data from point A to point B. And that's how we get lucky that way. And that's how they're going to get it, right? So when the data is So a lot of times, you know, when you see the keys, the USB card swipers at the restaurants, those are basically treated as keyboard input. So anything that a keyboard can enter into a system, that can be logged by a keylogger, right? So the keyloggers on the front of house terminals, you would see like keyloggers. And if the malware is on the back office machine, it would be one of two things. Network sniffing, because as Nick was mentioning earlier, that they want to place the malware where the data is unencrypted. And back of house server, when the malware, when you know the point of sale application processes that information, that's when it's unencrypted, and that's what they target. So over the course of years, I think
there was something about temporary file, like in memory.
Actually, so sometimes a lot of point of sale applications, when you swipe the credit card, they create the file for like a millisecond, and then they wipe it. But the attackers are getting the data in that millisecond.
That would be when it's on disk.
Yeah.
Then from the memory, you know, it's the memory dumpers were really developed by the attackers as sort of a solution to a problem, right?
Yeah.
The problem they were running into is that the data was starting to be sent to the systems encrypted. You know, they were using, you know, IPsec or SSL or something on the internal network. They can't sniff it anymore. And the data, when it's being stored in the database, it's sort of encrypted. So they can't just grab the database and go decrypt it. So they said, well, hey, where's the data in the clear? In memory. So let's start dumping memory to disk and parsing all the memory. And it, over time, they've evolved it into something very, very advanced, where there's not a lot of overhead in the system. It basically just grabs the data. And in the demos we showed, they write it to disk first, they RAR it, and they send it out. And some of the latest samples we're seeing today, they're actually taking it and streaming it out of the environment. And
buffers, one buffer to take the data, the other buffer to take the data out. So there's absolutely no storage on the disk. So if you're doing forensics and just looking for plain text card data, you're not going to find anything. So
even for files.
So a lot of forensics, our efforts have switched to memory forensics, because if the malware has to run. So malwares are basically protected by packers and in encryption. But, you know, at some point in time, they have to break, right? And that the place is memory. So if the malware has to run, then it's going to break out in the memory. And in the memory, if we do memory analysis, we'll find out the full features of this malware. Yeah. And then also, if it's a memory dumper malware, you know, we showed the examples of credit card data being targeted. But if you use a computer, you can think about how much stuff goes through your memory. You type an email, it goes through your memory first. You type in your bank account passwords, you know, do online banking. It goes through your memory first. So in memory, you know, the data, you're always going to find clear text data. And if you know what you're targeting, that's what you write parsers for. So you write regular expressions for different kind of, sensitive data. And in memory, the chances are you're going to find data.
In terms of credit card data, we're hearing a lot now about point-to-point encryption and some of these new payment terminals actually encrypt the
data at the swipe.
Data right at the swipe.
Yeah.
So does that kind of kill the whole memory in memory?
It would, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that would be a very good solution. I mean, you have the data at the swipe's being encrypted and it's being sent out. Now that kills that problem or that threat at the point of sale, right?
Yeah.
Now the data is going someplace and it's going to a payment processor, perhaps, right? The payment processor perhaps then has the keys to decrypt it, and they do things with it. We have seen payment card processor breaches in the past, and looking at sort of the way things evolve, the attackers aren't just going to go away, right?
Yeah.
They're going to focus all their attention now on the payment processors. Say, well, the data is not in the merchants anymore, so let's focus on the payment processor. So the payment processor will have to increase their levels of security as well.
Right, sure.
Another thing is, like, even with the, we've seen tampered terminals lately.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I think if you heard about the ALGI breach, the Greater Chicagoland breach in ALGI, there were tampered terminals. So it was like a standalone device that was processing credit cards and debit cards also. But they put some feature in there. They actually had tampered devices which would record the track data as it would be swiped on those terminals.
Yeah,
so they're going somewhere. I mean, you know, before it was just like, if you asked me about 3 years ago when we used to do this, we just used to see someone coming in. It was more like smash and grab. They would break into the system, they would take the database, and off they would go. And that sort of compromise was really hard to detect because, you know, they're just coming in and taking the data. There's not much footprint. But forensics landscape, I think it's better now because, you know, there's a lot that they do with the systems. Now, they're really good at malware development and breaking in, but digital artifacts, that's that's one skill that they still got to learn. And that's where we come in, and we basically, the more impact that they have on the system, the better for forensic investigators. And that's how we can, you know, find make this many findings and, you know, educate the crowds at conferences like Sector.
Sure. One last question. I thought that during the presentation, I heard one of you say that you're seeing a lot more rootkits these days. Is that a new trend, or has that been kind of an ongoing trend over the last several years?
Yeah, it's been there. It's just that, you know, last year when we did this malware freak show at Sector and other conferences, we demoed those malware. The malware that would just have like three pieces of executable doing the job. And, you know, those were rather easy to detect. Now, as, you know, we as Spider Labs, we have a lot of white papers that we publish regularly, and that has a very vast distribution. Like, we give it to the banks, the card brands, and they in turn give it to all their merchants. So I think what the attackers probably realized that, okay, you know what, this technique is out there because Spider Labs is just publishing these white papers. We had a, like, for this memory dumper malware, we had a paper on evolution of this malware. So we've seen, I think the first white paper I wrote was in 2008. That was when I said, oh, this is some really cool technique. And then we said publish that. But then, like, I think last year we published an evolution of the malware where we saw four phases of this malware. The technique is still the same. They're getting the data out of the memory, but they're, the malware, the code changes, and they're getting obfuscated. As I mentioned at the end, that the output is getting encrypted. So we don't really see the data on the system. We have to write code ourselves to actually find out what the hell they're taking.
Nick, one last question for you. You mentioned during the presentation there was something like 200 investigations that you've done over the last you guys, your team has done all over the last year.
Yeah.
And is that more or less the same, or is that rising? Do you guys hold, is that the threshold for you?
No. It's actually, I would say we're a bit more than we were last year. Actually, we had a very, very busy, sort of the middle part of this year. There was a big rash of breaches that took place globally, and I'd say all the investigators on our team were all over the place. I mean, a lot of hours worked, very, very busy year. I would say, you know, as far as the attackers aren't going away. They're, you know, sometimes people say, well, we've seen breach trends decreasing. I mean, I don't know what people are looking at when they come to that conclusion, because if you talk to anybody who's in, you know, doing this analysis, or even at the levels of, like, you know, like card brands and things, their lows have increased. The attackers are, you know, as organizations, and it's sort of the model, right? So you have organizations at the top, the large organizations are becoming more secure. You know, your big payment processors, your large merchants, or upgrading technology. Maybe some people are doing, you know, end-to-end encryption. But the small organizations, you know, like your small hotels and restaurants, they're not anywhere near that. They're not anywhere near even, you know, things like changing their passwords. You know, so the attackers know that, and so they're farming basically that population as much as they can. And that's where a lot of the investigation.
Yeah. I think we've done. I think this year we've done a record number.
Yeah. I was the data center in a bar.
Yeah. No, that was pretty stuff. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I've even seen, you know, payment processors. There was one payment processor that I worked on. This is going a couple of years ago, where we went into the environment and it looks like, you know, a data center, and started looking at their network diagrams, and you're like, what's going on here? And, you know, I just couldn't really understand what was going on, and then started asking them for IP address information on some of the systems, and noticed that, like, some of the systems had 4 and 5 IP addresses each, and, like, internal IP addresses, and all of them were on different subnets. And it sort of drilled down deeper into it, and turned out that whoever set up their network basically set up one flat collision domain and set up subnets, but in order for a system to talk to another system on another subnet, they just added an IP address. So basically it was one flat network, like physical network, mm-hmm. And if you had 192.168.2.1 over here, 192.168.3.1, they couldn't talk to each other because they're not in the same subnet. So what they did is they said, okay, well, this guy needs to talk to him, so we're going to add another IP address so that he can talk to each other. It was this big, messy.
I think we always tend to overestimate the big environments. We think, oh, it's this company, I think they're going to be really secure. It's only until we get there that we find out, oh, they're just like these little guys. It's just, you know, that it's the same. The talent level, you know, there's a gap between, you know, skill level between IT administrators and the security folks who do the job. As you can see, this is just customized malware, so antivirus has no chance. Because it's more like a technique. You're dumping a memory. And if memory dumping was flagged, then you know a lot of other applications like Internet Explorer, that those will be flagged as a malware because they dump the memory when system crashes, right? When some application crashes, it gets it. But I think going back to the point how busy we were this year, I think I was joking with my boss that, you know, the bonuses this year are paying for my wedding. So it's been really that busy this year. I think we've broken all the records, frequent flyer miles-wise or, you know, cases-wise.
Well, hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, thank you so much.
That does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information by going to our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.